Beyond Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is happening and welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Thursday, May 3rd. And one of the stars of Detroit's winning pro franchise will join us today. This is your boy Matt Shook, an AP writer out here in Chicago covering the NBA. A sports newspaper reporter for over a decade as well. Today we're going to be recapping Game 2 of the Western Conference Semifinals. The Utah Jazz are in the building in Round 2 right now. We'll also be talking to today's featured guest, Chris Del R. Sapriti of the Pistons GT team. He's better known as Insanity in the gaming world. As the team prepares for the playoffs in the opening tournament of the NBA 2K League inaugural season, those playoffs will be on Saturday. We'll also have another segment of Pistons playoff playback. We'll be rejoicing in some of the beautiful ugliness that was the going-to-work era, a black mark for some that follow the NBA in terms of offensive offense, but a brand of basketball that myself and many of the Pistons faithful found breathtakingly beautiful, as a matter of fact. But, like I said, the Utah Jazz, yes, the Utah Jazz earned a road victory in Game 2 of the Western Conference Semifinals, 116-108. On Wednesday night without Ricky Rubio, tying the series with the Houston Rockets at 1-1. And I get it. I know that the main takeaway of this game for Pistons fans and anything involving the Jazz is that Donovan Mitchell is a stud and Stan Van Gundy is an idiot for not picking him. But we're not going to do that every night here during the playoffs. We're not going to beat you guys up and myself up about that every time he does something over the next 15 years or so. Although I kind of have a funny feeling that I might not be doing this podcast 15 years from now. In 2033, maybe I'll be handing it off to someone by then, but I hope not anyways. Or maybe I do. I hope so. Maybe I hope I am still hosting Locked On Pistons in 15 years. God willing, I guess. Who knows? But anyways, the Mitchell highlight, of course, that everyone's going to be talking about Thursday at the water cooler. If the water cooler is such a thing anymore, I don't know what the millennials have as far as a water cooler. Maybe coffee shop. I don't know. I'm too old to know that stuff. But the drive and miss, and then somehow Mitchell goes up, collected himself with enough quick spring to get up and grab the offensive rebound. And as he said in the postgame presser, that he, on his way down, decided he might as well throw it down over a couple of Rockets through the huge slam tap of his own miss over a couple of the Houston players. Quick jump kind of reminded you a little bit of Andre Drummond. Obviously, even more impressive from a 6'1", 6'2" guy that Donovan Mitchell is. An incredible play by an athlete that I'm going to be enjoying watching throughout his career. I'm not going to let the fact that Detroit missed on him ruin my Donovan Mitchell experience permanently. And it's a stance that I hope that all of you guys consider as well. It makes life a little bit easier. Mitchell had 17 points. This was the first game in this postseason that he didn't get 20. In the first game in these playoffs that he did not lead the Jazz in scoring as well. But he made up for that lack of scoring, quote-unquote, by setting the Jazz rookie record for assists in a postseason game with 11. Many of those assists going to Joe Ingles. The Australian had 27 points. The Jazz closed it off or took command with a 16-2 run in the fourth quarter. The second time they took command of the game, and they held on to it this time after the first run in the first half put them up by 19 points before halftime. An incredible effort from the Jazz and coach Quinn Snyder. And maybe I'll do an episode next. Why can't the Detroit Pistons have a Quinn Snyder? In the same vein of the Brad Stevens episode I did the other day for Houston. James Harden, 32 points and 11 assists for the presumptive MVP of the league. Chris Paul had 23 points, and I love it. I love seeing Houston in trouble. And again, I'm not going to get too crazy about this. I'm not saying that the Jazz will win this series. I don't think that's happening. But I will say this. I think it's more likely that the Jazz beat Houston in this series than it is that Houston beats Golden State in the Western Conference Finals. And I don't think there's a lot of podcasters out there that will go out and say that. Now, of course, watch me be wrong about this. But that's how I feel about the hierarchy in the Western Conference, that the spot between the Rockets and everyone else is closer than the Warriors and the Rockets, or the Warriors and everyone else is how you could word that, I guess, as well. I really think that there's a low probability of both of those things happening, of course, but like I said, that's where I'm at with the pecking order in the Western Conference right now, and the distance of between the pecking order members of the peck. I don't know. Moving on. Game 3, Friday in Utah. And tonight, a couple of Eastern Conference games. The Cavs at the Raptors in Toronto. Really unfortunate for Toronto that they have a 6 p.m. start for Game 2. Those fans will be Jacked up for that one, but it could add a little bit of weirdness, that early start, to what could already be a strange atmosphere tonight in Toronto. We know about LeBron James and the way he's owned that team in the playoffs the last couple of years. They have not looked themselves in the last couple of years up against LeBron and the Cavs, and certainly that was the case the other night in Game 1 as they lost in overtime in a game that a better fourth quarter probably puts that away and gives them a big Game 1 victory, and now they're clawing from behind. But Vegas likes them. Toronto, 6.5-point favorites at home. I don't know. I think I might be all over that 6.5, even though I do think still Toronto wins this series. I know there might be a joke in some corners of the internet, and especially my buddy Jason, who texts me about that prediction and makes fun of me, and he's a big LeBron guy. But I just, Tristan Thompson, those guys are opening my eyes a little bit with the back-to-lifedness of the Cleveland Cavaliers and some of their role guys, veteran guys. But again, you expect that the Toronto bench will make their mark, that DeMar DeRozan will dominate at least a couple of games of this series, and that Toronto will be back in control with a Game 2 win tonight. But like I said, 6.5 points, still a lot, especially considering that you're taking LeBron James and 6.5 points in a playoff game. Although we do have seen the Cavs kind of turn it off sometimes, even in these playoffs and those couple of games where they got blown out against Indiana in the first round. The other game, 76ers at the Celtics, 8:30 tonight in Boston. The 76ers on the road, 4.5-point favorites, trailing that series 1-0. So the favorites are expected to even up tonight, according to Vegas, in both of those series, one at home and one on the road. I agree with that. I think the favorites will win both of those games. But like I said, again, with the 76ers, I'm not sure about all those points that Vegas is laying in that one, so I kind of might be staying away from those games. Other NBA news that tangentially involves the Pistons: the Phoenix Suns wins outside of the box for their new coach, Utah assistant Igor Kokoskov. He has some experience coaching in Slovenia. He grew up in Serbia, I believe. This is the first NBA coach that was born outside in the United States and also raised outside of the United States. So a monumental hire for the Phoenix Suns organization. He was involved with the Steve Nash Phoenix Suns teams. He also was involved with the Detroit Pistons organization too. And I'll have a little bit more notes about that after the break too, about Igor's connection with the Detroit Pistons. But we're going to be talking to Chris Delar Sapridi of the Pistons GT team as they prepare for Saturday's playoffs in the first tournament of the NBA 2K League. But if your company wants to reach men between the ages of 18 and 44, you should be sponsoring Locked On Pistons. Locked On Pistons is listened to by 98% men and 80% between the ages of 18 to 44. So if that demo sounds good to you, this is your spot. Plus, we got reasonable rates. So email me at Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, at yahoo.com to find out more.
Yes, sir!
Later on in the show, of course, we're going to be reliving the past a little bit because we can't do it in the present with the Pistons playoff playback episode. But as promised, I wanted to pass along some notes about the specifics about Igor Kokoskov's former career with the Detroit Pistons. He was an assistant coach, joined the franchise in 2003 when Larry Brown took over, won the NBA championship with the team in 2004 as an assistant coach, and stayed through 2008, coaching with Flip Saunders as well, when he joined the Phoenix Suns and became part of the Steve Nash offense out in Phoenix as well. I looked and there was 5 assistant coaches when the Pistons won the championship full-time in 2004 with Herb Brown, of course, Larry's brother, also a former Pistons head coach himself in the late 1970s. Then you had Igor Kokoskov, Dave Hanners, and then former Pistons head coach John Kuster, along with former Knicks and Atlanta Hawks head coach Mike Woodson. And now the Pistons this past season have like 7 guys that are considered full-time assistant coaches. When is there too many coaches, by the way? That's my question. Of course, Chuck Daly just had the Brendans, Brendan Sir and Brendan Malone. But that's the history of Igor Kokoskov as assistant coach for the Detroit Pistons back during some of the glory days as well. But speaking of glory days, the Pistons GT team, they went 2-1 on Tuesday in pool play for the first tournament of the NBA 2K League, playing Saturday in the playoffs. They will be playing against Warriors Gaming. The Dubs went 2-1 on Wednesday, and the Jazz also qualified for Saturday's 8-team playoffs as well, joining the Pistons GT team and the Cavs Legion. So three NBA franchises tied to their GT or tied to their gaming teams that are still alive in the NBA playoffs, along with the Detroit franchise, with the Pistons GT just kind of carrying the torch there. But here's my interview with Chris Delar Sapriti of the Pistons GT team. He joined me on Wednesday from New York City, and here it is.
Chris, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, so what's it been like in New York so far? You guys have had your first experience as a team, and looking ahead to a big weekend. How's it been for you guys out there?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a crazy experience. You know, we've been traveling a lot recently, and I think that it helps that, you know, our team chemistry, I feel like we have the best team chemistry in the league. You know, I always say that team chemistry is the most important factor in 2K and being a successful team. And, you know, we've been going out to eat the dinner. We've been doing a bunch of team bonding exercises and activities. I think we've been scrimming and practicing harder than any other team in the league. You know, we played so many games together now that I feel like we're getting a comfortability level with one another. So, you know, just being here in New York, getting to experience, you know, what New York has to offer. And, I mean, the venue that we're at, the arena that we're at, I'm actually at right now, you know, it's set up beautifully. The 2K production staff and the NBA put on a great experience. The live stream turned out amazing. I think it peaked at 14,000 viewers last night. So I just think it's a great time in, for the league and the NBA and 2K in general.
You mentioned that team chemistry that the Pistons GT team has. What were some of the things that you were doing in those first couple weeks in Detroit? You guys were up at the Palace practicing, and I know you guys live from Vince Ellis's article in the Free Press. You guys are living in West Bloomfield as well. What are you doing around town, and what are you doing to try to get to know each other over these last few weeks?
Yeah, so I think the great thing that Adam, our manager, and Dewan, our coach, did for us, as soon as we arrived in Detroit, you know, literally like an hour later, we went to Dave & Buster's, and we actually competed for rooms. So the way it's set up for us is we have a house and an apartment, and it's three bedrooms for the house and three for the apartment. So we actually played six different games at Dave & Buster's to compete for a room. So it was kind of like judging a point system, and whoever had the most points at the end of the day got the first choice at a room. And through that, I feel like we were just able to have some fun. You know, it was the first time we were all meeting each other in person. So it was a great way to get to know one another, have some fun. You know, it was like kind of like an icebreaker. And then, you know, after that, we were just like I said earlier, like we're going out to eat the dinner. We got to tour the new LCA arena, which is beautiful. It's so nice. You know, got to step right into the box where the hockey players play. So, you know, just everything that we've been doing, it's been bringing us closer together. And I look forward to, you know, the things that we're going to be doing throughout the whole summer that we're in Detroit.
Now, Chris, you're from Pennsylvania. What's your background in gaming? How'd you get involved? And how old a guy are you? Were you in school? What's kind of your background before coming to the team?
Yeah, for sure. So I'm 24 years old right now. I actually graduated from Temple University in 2015 with a marketing degree. I started gaming around 2011, 2012. I used to play Halo, kind of competitively. That's where I kind of got my drive and passion for esports. But I started playing NBA 2K in about 2K13. And NBA 2K14, I decided to hop on a website called Game Battles. That's kind of where a few of my friends in real life are playing, kind of just for fun. You're able to play in team-up leagues and team-up tournaments where you and like a few of your friends could enter and play against like three other people. There's also like a season ladder. So that's where I met a lot of people who are actually in the league today. And through that, I started a team. It was called Throwdown. And then I also met other people on there. It kind of helped me form my team. And then once 2K16 came around, that was the first time ever where there was a tournament with money associated with it. It was called the Road to the Finals tournament in 2K16. So I was on Xbox back then, and our team actually qualified as the number one seed on Xbox. And then we ended up losing in the second round of that tournament to the eventual Xbox winners, GFG. So after that, like, I knew I had, you know, an even stronger passion and desire to play 2K at a high level in a competitive scene. So in 2K17, they had a similar tournament. It was called Road to the All-Star Game. We actually switched consoles to PlayStation 4. And we qualified again for that tournament, and we made it all the way to the finals in New Orleans for a chance to compete for $250,000. Unfortunately, we lost that game, but, you know, that whole experience. And right around that time, that's when the 2K League was announced. So there was a lot of stuff going on at once, and it was a crazy time. And, you know, all those experiences that I mentioned helped, you know, was a really, really big factor of where I am today in Detroit.
Yeah, we're talking to Chris Del R. Capretti, the second round pick for the Detroit or the Pistons GT team. His handle is Insanity. You can find him on the games on the Twitch channel this weekend. The Pistons GT will be playing on Saturday in the playoff round for the opening tournament for the league this weekend. Now, what separates some of your teammates? You talked about the team chemistry you guys have. Have you guys fit into your roles, kind of off the court kind of thing, as far as, you know, this guy's kind of the jokester of the team, this guy's the quiet guy, or what's kind of the roles that you guys have settled into?
Yeah, for sure. So we definitely have, you know, everyone has their own kind of personality, as you would expect. Something that I found kind of funny and you know, surprising is that one guy on our team, Rux, he's actually come to the circle. He's kind of come to the forefront and being like the team trash talker. He has some like funny lines that he says, and he likes to get under the opponent's skin during games. And that kind of, you know, that kind of calms us down and makes us laugh kind of in stressful situations. And that's, I think that's really helpful for us. I think every team, you know, should have a personality like that where, you know, he takes things seriously, but at the same time, you know, he's an easygoing guy with a funny personality. And, you know, everyone on the team has their own sort of personality. Some people are a little bit more quiet, you know, but those people still bring a lot of value to the team. And the people who are outspoken, you know, those are the leaders who really step up in the game, and they're calling the shots and the plays. And those are the people that we can trust to make the right decisions in the crucial moments.
So maybe that's the Rasheed Wallace of the team this year.
Yeah, that's the perfect example, actually. Yep.
Well, and obviously, you guys are looking ahead to the weekend. Do you feel like from Tuesday, as we taped this yesterday, to Saturday, that you guys will be able to make a lot of different adjustments and a lot of improvements after being on the big stage for maybe the first time as a team on Tuesday?
Absolutely. You know, we're a team that we love to watch film. You know, we gain a lot of value and insight in going back and watching all of our games, sometimes 2, 3, 4 times over, really honing in on the things that we were doing right, and especially the things that we need to clean up, because I mean, no team is perfect, especially us. We actually had deficits in all three games, that in the first two games we were fortunate enough to crawl back and kind of show our mental fortitude. And the third game, it kind of got out of hand in the second half, even though we made a little bit of a run in the third quarter. You know, there's a lot we need to improve on and work on from that game. So, you know, we haven't watched it as a team yet, but I know that we're going to, you know, at least a few times in the next couple of days, and we're gonna, you know, take a lot away from that game, and we're gonna apply it to the next game moving forward, as well as the rest of the season.
Well, Chris Del R. Capretti, we're gonna be watching this weekend on Twitch and also throughout the season. I'm not a gamer, but I watched yesterday for a bit of the first game. Saw you guys got the historic win, the first in NBA 2K League history. But thanks for coming and representing Detroit, and I hope you guys enjoy your summer in Motown and along with the competition in New York City. Thanks for taking the time today.
Thank you so much again for having me, and Detroit first, everybody. Let's go.
Now time for Today in Pistons playoff playback. May 3rd, 2004, on the road to the championship, the Pistons and Nets set some records for futility, but it was beautiful to us, man. Second round, Eastern Conference playoffs, the semifinals, the Detroit Pistons and New Jersey Nets, a rematch of the 2003 Eastern Conference Finals, which was a New Jersey sweep this time. Game one of the second round, that's right, 14 years ago today, this spring, at the Palace of Auburn Hills, the Pistons held the Nets to the second lowest playoff point total in playoff history in the NBA, winning 78-56. The lowest point total in NBA history was in 2002, and that was by the Boston Celtics against who? Guess who? The Detroit Pistons. So they hold records for defensive, holding the teams to the lowest point totals for top two there. Three players tied for the game high in scoring 14 years ago today. Kenyon Martin of the New Jersey Nets, along with Pistons, Rip Hamilton and Tayshaun Prince. They each had 15 points apiece. I think LeBron already has like 13 for tonight's game. Somehow 13 points for Ben Wallace in this game and 11 boards. The halftime score was just 37-25. Just great stuff for NBA viewers all over the country. Darko got in the game, played a minute, committed a foul. Just an amazing box score to look at, and I encourage you guys to do just that. It just looks like a high school varsity box score or something like that. The Nets shot 19 of 71 from the field for 27%. Great stuff. I just like the drama of those slugfests. I'm sure if you were an unbiased observer, you probably just hated this brand of basketball, and I guess I understand it. felt like a struggle. Every basket mattered, and there was a built-in drama with all that. I know I'm probably in the minority for that one, maybe even amongst Pistons fans as well. Going through the box, some other notables for that game. This was year three for Richard Jefferson's career for the Nets. He is still going, just finished year 17, playing 20 games for the Denver Nuggets this year. He might be done, though. He may have reached the end of the road. I haven't heard anything specific about Richard Jefferson in retirement, but we'll keep an eye on it there. New Jersey's starting center that year, Jason Collins, who would make global headlines in 2003, 9 years later, as the first, the only current NBA player at that time, and still at this time, to come out publicly as gay. And also a key bench player for the Nets back then was Rodney Rogers, who was involved in a dirt bike accident, a very serious one in 2008 that threatened his life and paralyzed him from the shoulders down. So some news and notes there from that box score. But my favorite news and note comes from the Pistons bench at that time. And I know you know all these names, but ironic that they're all former basketball coaches and really either current basketball coaches. Some of them I don't really quite know whether to call them former or current, because you have all players that played off the bench for the Pistons that year in 2004 in this game that I'm talking about. Lindsey Hunter, last year, not this past year, but the year before that, was an assistant coach at the University at Buffalo, and he left the team last summer to come home to Detroit, and he is now being rumored, my buddy Tony Paul, who's a writer for the Detroit News, kind of a writer who, a general assignment sports writer, covers all sorts of things. He does a great job for them, coming up with weird, crazy stuff, including his Silver Dome story about the WrestleMania 3, which you haven't, if you haven't seen that, I encourage you to read that from last year that he got a bunch of APSC awards for as well. We'll try to get Tony Paul on the show sometime this summer. But anyway, he is a candidate for that University of Detroit men's basketball job, which remains a mystery to this day. You should read Tony's coverage about that. He does a great job staying on top of the Titans there. But like I said, Lindsey Hunter, out of work as far as coaching, maybe looking for a job this summer. Corliss Williamson, who we had on the show a couple months ago, he was an assistant coach this past summer for the, or this past season for the Orlando Magic, but we know that Frank Vogel out of a job as the head coach there. So we'll see where Corliss's career, whether he stays in Orlando or remains in limbo as well. Darvin Ham, Duncan Darvin, was an assistant coach with the Atlanta Hawks, the top assistant coach for them, actually. And we know that Mike Budenholzer has moved on from the Atlanta Hawks. So who knows what Darvin Ham's future brings? And he's a guy who's mentioned as a fringe candidate for head coaching positions. I'm not sure that he's quite going to be that yet, or maybe he will be this coming year. But obviously another name from the 2004 Pistons bench that is in the coaching circles. And don't forget Mehmet Okur. He was fired this year, early this season, with the Phoenix Suns when they shook everything up and fired Earl Watson. And if you remember, he had the Instagram post right after that Mehmet did with a picture of him and his family, kind of with some profane language towards the Phoenix Suns, and just ripping on that organization. So, like I said, Lindsey Hunter, Corliss Williamson, Darvin Ham, Mehmet Okur. If Jerry Stackhouse wants to come in and coach this team, he could bring in the whole 2004 roster to come alongside him. And we know about Chauncey Billups being rumored to be running a team sometime, Ben Wallace owning the Grand Rapids Drive. I mean, it's cut out perfectly for those of you who want to bring back all the old Pistons, like the Tigers kid did with the Alan Trammell, Kirk Gibson, Lance Parrish days back in the day too. Maybe they shouldn't go down that road given our history here in Detroit sports. But anyway, give us a follow on Twitter at @Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore after that. Also the Locked On Pistons Twitter account. And give us a like on the Facebook page, Locked On Pistons-MattShook. Give us a rating and review on iTunes if you would. This weekend, no more shows until Monday unless something big happens. From now until then, I will be in Las Vegas, and I will be planning on recording some of the podcast on Sunday from Las Vegas. Hopefully, I'll get a little bit of it knocked out before I hit the road here. But talking NBA, talking about what the Pistons GT team does this weekend. But like I said, maybe pre-recording as much as we can so we don't have to do too much work when I'd rather be hanging out in the sports book or drinking poolside or playing some blackjack in Las Vegas. But thanks for listening, everyone. Enjoy the weekend, and we'll talk to you all again very soon.